We stand by Ukraine, and we will make Russia pay for its cruelty.
Your back. We were with you then, we are with you now, we will be with you for as long as it takes. Freedom will prevail, peace will reign, you will win. Slava Ukraini.
This attack has brought to the surface painful memories and the scars left by a millennia of anti-Semitism and genocide of the Jewish people. So in this moment, we must be crystal clear. We stand with Israel. We stand with Israel. And we will make sure Israel has what it needs to take care of its citizens, defend itself, and respond to this attack. There's no justification for terrorism.
Hey, quick question. Do you know what happened to daily Ukraine and Maui reports? I don't see almost any of it on my feed anymore. It's as if the narrative changed overnight, literally. And, as I mentioned previously, how is it possible that Mossad were not able to see any of the attacks? Especially Hamas flying with parachutes? Come on now, let's not be ridiculous here. I don't buy it for a second. But in this video, I wanted to touch on obviously fake CNN reports on propaganda, but even more so how the internet can create and spread its own propaganda, and why you have to filter everything you see and hear. What am I talking about? Well, someone took a fake CNN report, right, and added their own fake voiceover. And of course, the internet being the internet, obviously, took that video and ran with it, spreading it and claiming that this is somehow the real deal, when it's simply not. But it's already too late at that point. The conspiracy people already shared it thousands of times, if not more, and therefore I'm saying that this is not how you should be exposing these types of things, because now the so-called fact checkers can tell the general public that this is obviously edited, and they will write it off as another nonsense. Even though the video itself is obviously scripted. I'll play both clips so you'll get a better understanding of what I'm talking about.
Just moments ago, CNN's teams on the ground near the Israel-Gaza border, they had to take cover, jump in a ditch because of what was happening overhead. I'm going to show you these moments. Listen to this.
Get down.
Go. Go.
Closer.
Down.
Get down. Close, close, close.
You're fine.
You're okay. You're all right. You're all right.
Okay.
That's the Iron Dome. Okay?
Yeah,
that's the Iron Dome.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Clarissa is on the ground right now. Clarissa, tell us what's happening.
Stand by.
Hi, John. So forgive me, I have a slightly unelegant position, but we have just had a massive barrage of rockets coming in here, not too far from us. So we have had to take shelter here by the roadside. We're just about 5 minutes away. Gaza is in that direction. We can hear now a lot of jets in the sky. We could also hear the Iron Dome intercepting a number of those rockets as they were whizzing overhead and making impact in that direction, not too far from here. We came to this location because this was ground zero for this entire operation of carnage. Hamas militants came on a pickup truck. This was the first place where they breached that border wall, and they basically drove down this strip, just spraying lead wherever they went. We saw, in fact, I was just grabbing it before that happened and we had to hit the deck, but heavy weaponry being used. It's saying we can get up now. Where are we moving to? Sorry, just one second, guys. Okay.
Let's come up and go this way and then...
All right, so now I can show you the scene here. This is where those militants first came.
Yeah, we're getting video through now, Jerry. Now, you can see the area is completely deserted, but I want you to get them off the road. Get them laid down next to the road, okay? Closer to the road, Jerry. Move them. It looks like you're in the middle of a forest.
Sit down. Close, close, close.
Okay, Jerry, tell the cameraman to keep Clarissa in shot, okay? It's not the Blair Witch Project.
You're fine.
That's it. Perfect. Okay. Get nice and close. Get the cameraman nice and close.
That's the Iron Dome, okay? That's
right, now look around, Jerry. Just look around as if you're in danger. Try and look nice and scared. Yeah, that's it. Catching your breath. Dead scary over here with all the bombs going off and all that.
Guys.
Okay, that's beautiful. That's the money shot. Nice and tight on Clarissa.
Are you seeing our situation, guys?
Hello, yes.
Yes.
Can she hear the shells, Jerry? Because they are about 6 miles away.
Can you hear the shells?
Stay down.
Derek, can you boost the volume on those explosions, please?
We have to stay here.
Oh, and be a darling and patch me through to Clarissa's microphone,
guys,
please.
Guys, come to us.
Clarissa, I need you to stop swearing. You're overdoing it. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. Now, we're getting set up on sound and visual. We should be going live in about 15 seconds. Okay.
Were you guys rolling on this?
Yeah, we're rolling, Clarissa, but we're not live yet. Okay. We can't show the earlier bit because we want people to think you're in danger.
And a similar situation happened when Ben Shapiro shared with his audience fake AI-generated photos of allegedly burnt, well, babies, right? Of course, if war is declared, it's going to be brutal, no doubt about it. But with all this fakery that's going on, you have to be extremely careful not to fall for it. That's why I suggest you sticking with Jesus Christ and your King James Bible. Everything can be manipulated, and it will be. But God's word stands forever. We know that.
If we look at the Middle East, I think it's about time we stop, those of us who support, as most of us do, Israel in this body, for apologizing for our support for Israel. There's no apology to be made. None. It is the best $3 billion investment we make. Were there not an Israel, the United States of America would have to invent an Israel to protect her interest in the region. The United States would have to go out and invent an Israel.
Were today, begin to withdraw all American troops. It will take a year to get the American troops out. Do you hear me now? That's the truth. It will take a year to get them physically out. Now, if you leave all the equipment behind, you might be able to do it in 7 months. And you leave those billions of dollars of weapons behind, I promise they're going to be used against your grandchild and mine someday. And you leave those billions of dollars of weapons behind, I promise they're going to be used against your grandchild and mine someday.
And what about those Palestinians in hospital who are on life support and babies and incubators whose life support and incubator will have to be turned off because the Israelis have cut the power to Gaza?
Are you seriously keep on asking me about Palestinian civilians? What's wrong with you? Have you not seen what happened? We're fighting Nazis. We don't target them. Now, the world can come and bring them anything they want. If you want to bring them electricity, I'm not going to feed electricity or water to my enemies. If anyone else wants, that's fine. We're not responsible for them.
This is the point.
But you
this
keep
is
on.
The point.
You, no, no, I want to tell you. No, listen. You listen
to
me right
your
now.
Voice,
I've heard
trying...
you enough.
No, no, I understand. We're trying to have a conversation here. Listen, this is my program. This is my show. And I am asking the questions.
Exactly.
You're raising your voice,
yeah,
and I've asked you, and we've already stopped, please. And let me finish. We've already distinguished between
you,
Hamas.
Mister. I want to tell you, you shame on you.
You're trying to speak over me. No,
we
no.
are not Shame on you.
It's nothing about Shen. We're trying to have a conversation about a very serious situation here, and you are refusing to address it.
Jump over immediately. And again, you
absolutely not. You are incorrect.
They are responsible, because I can tell you that when the UK,
absolutely
when Great
not.
Britain was fighting the Nazis during World War II, no one asked what's going on in Dresden. It was the Nazis targeting London, and you targeted Dresden. So
listen,
shame on you if you go on with that false narrative.
We're not talking about that. And in hindsight, many people have readdressed that kind of carpet bombing.
Oh, I see. Now you're Mr. Clean. Shame on you.
Absolutely not. And I'm not. Listen, Mr. Bennett, I am not in the military. I am a journalist asking you questions. Are you going to let me ask you a question, or are you going to continue shouting at me? We've already distinguished between Hamas and the Palestinians. I'm asking you very directly, very directly.
What do you want to ask?
What is going to be done to make sure that those innocent people don't get killed, as innocent Jewish people were killed on Saturday?
Well, we're going to target Hamas, and we're telling Hamas that if you use anyone as your human shield, and you're going to shoot at us using human shields, that it's their responsibility. Listen, mister, if someone is shooting at your children and hiding behind a human shield, will you shoot back or not? I'm asking you a question. Someone's shooting at your children, but hiding behind civilians. What's the answer? What would you do?
Mr. Bennett, I'm not here to answer your questions. I've asked you your questions, and you have not answered them directly.
I understand.
All right.
So
we'll stop. We'll leave it there. Naftali Bennett.
John, you were in Vietnam for the CIA, and as I understand, you were up country. What years were you there?
73 to 75, right after the troop evacuation, and I came out in the evacuation of April of 75.
How long were you with the CIA?
13 years. I was a field case officer, mm-hmm. served in Africa and Vietnam, and then eventually on a subcommittee of the National Security Council in Washington. Well, one of the four principal functions of the CIA is to gather intelligence and ideally forward it to the president, the users of information, the policymakers, as they say. There are other functions, however, some of them more legitimate than others. One is to run secret wars. Another thing is to disseminate propaganda to influence people's minds. And this is a major function of the CIA. And unfortunately, of course, it overlaps into the gathering of information. You have contact with a journalist, you will give him true stories, you'll get information from him, you'll also give him false stories.
Did you do buy his confidence with true stories?
You buy his confidence and set him up. We've seen this happen recently with Jack Anderson, for example, who has his intelligence sources, and he has also admitted that he's been set up by him. You know, every fifth story just simply being false. You also work on their human vulnerabilities to recruit them in a classic sense, to make them your agent so that you can control what they do, so you don't have to set them up sort of, you know, by putting one over on them. So you can say, here, plant this one next Tuesday.
Can you do this with responsible reporters?
Yes, the Church Committee brought it out in 1975, and then Woodward and Bernstein put an article in Rolling Stone a couple of years later. 400 journalists cooperating with the CIA, including some of the biggest names in the business, to consciously introduce the stories into the press. Well, for example, in my war, the Angola war that I helped to manage, one-third of my staff was propaganda. Ironically, it's called covert action inside the CIA. Outside, that means the violent part. I had propagandists all over the world, principally in London, Kinshasa, and Zambia. We would take stories which we would write and put them in the Zambia Times, and then pull them out and send them to a journalist on our payroll in Europe. But his cover story, you see, would be that he'd gotten them from his stringer in Lusaka, who had gotten them from the Zambia Times. We had the complicity of the government of Zambia, Kenneth Kaunda, if you will, to put these false stories into his newspapers. But after that point, the journalists, Reuters and AFP, the management was not witting of it. Now, our contact man in Europe was, and we pumped just dozens of stories about Cuban atrocities, Cuban rapists, In one case, we had the Cuban rapists caught and tried by the Ovimbundu maidens who had been their victims. And then we ran photographs that made almost every newspaper in the country of the Cubans being executed by the Ovimbundu women who supposedly had been their victims.
But these were fake photos?
Oh, absolutely. We didn't know of one single atrocity committed by the Cubans. It was pure, raw, false propaganda to create an illusion of communists, you know, eating babies for breakfast and that sort of totally false propaganda.
John, was this sort of thing practiced in Vietnam?
Oh, endlessly, a massive propaganda effort in Vietnam in the 50s and in the 60s, including the 1,000 books that were published, several hundred in English, that were also propaganda books, sponsored by the CIA. Give some money to a writer, write this book for us, write anything you want, but on these matters, make sure, you know, you have this line.
Writers in this country?
Sure.
Books sold and distributed in this country?
Sure, yeah. English language books, meaning an American audience as a target, on the subject of Vietnam and the history of Vietnam and the history of Marxism and supporting the domino theory, etc.
Without opening us up to a lawsuit, could you name one of them?
No, I could not. The church committee, when they found this out, demanded that they be given the titles so that the university libraries could at least go and stamp inside Central Intelligence Agency's version of history. And the CIA refused because it's been commissioned to protect its sources and methods, and the sources would be the authors who wrote these false propaganda books, some of whom are now distinguished scholars and journalists. We were planting stories in the Washington Post. By that I mean not through Lusaka, but we actually flew a journalist from Paris to Washington to plant a false story. I mention it. I give the text of the story in my book.
So you planted a story in the Washington Post by bringing a man from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
You had no difficulty? You got right past the editor with it?
Yeah.
Is this common? Is it easy?
It's easier than you would think, yes. Yes. If it's on the line of, for example, if it's on the line of Grenada being radical today, we've had articles in the Washington Post, The Star before it closed, Time magazine, that could only have been written originally by the CIA, Soviet submarine base, terrorist training. Here's a little island where the major source of income is selling spice to the West, Western tourism, and a large United States medical school. Tiny little island, 15 miles by 10 miles across, with 70,000 people, with U.S. medical students in their cutaways and sandals and their noses in books wandering all over the island. And yet, major press organs, Time magazine, running stories about their being so radical.
Two of the most hated people on planet Earth right now are politicians and the media. They're trying to divide us. They're lying to us. Everybody's catching on and everybody's starting to get it now, right? We didn't get it 2.5-3 years ago. Everybody's starting to get it now. I don't give a shit what the media does. I don't care what they do, what they say. They don't matter to me. They're not as powerful and they're not as influential as they think they are.
The problem is that you don't sit still for very long in combat, because if you do, you're going to be targeted and destroyed. And that, of course, is what we're seeing in Ukraine. Persistent surveillance from space, from overhead surveillance, makes everything visible all the time. So if you're going to embed yourself in the ground, if you're going to set up a permanent position there where you try to fire from that, you're going to be targeted and destroyed very, very quickly. So that's why this defense right now looks a lot like World War I, because anybody who moves is identified and killed. The only limitation on your ability to target and destroy the enemy is ammunition. The Russians, of course, have no shortages whatsoever. You recall at the beginning of this, we have all these shortages, right? The Russians can't keep up with missiles. The Russians can't keep up with shells. Well, they have multiple manufacturing facilities operating 7 days a week at 24 hours a day. We have no surge capacity in the United States. It would take us many, many months to come up to that kind of standard where we could actually compete in high-end conventional warfare. And that's why people like me and others worry that if we get into a confrontation, that we cannot win. Because the world has changed, warfare has changed, integrated air defenses will knock virtually everything that flies out of the sky, that we will then fall back on a nuclear deterrent, a tactical nuclear weapon that says, if you keep advancing, we'll have to use a nuclear weapon. We don't want to go there because the notion that there are so-called tactical nukes, you've heard that expression?
Yes.
Oh, that's just a little nuke. So that won't precipitate a major war. The use of any nuclear weapon is going to precipitate escalation very rapidly because your opponents will assume that if they don't use their nuclear weapons, they're going to lose them. So we're living in a terrible dilemma right now. The smartest thing that we can do is end this war.
What is the Ukrainian objective?
I think more and more Ukrainians just want to survive this. And that's becoming very hard. And Zelensky and the radicals around him are basically committed to fighting this war to the last Ukrainian. And of course, I'm sure that Mr. Zelensky and his friends are anxious at some point to retire to their estates in Florida or Venice or Cyprus to collect on the billions that they've managed to steal or siphon from all the aid that we've provided. Remember, Ukraine is probably one of the most corrupt places in the world. A friend of mine who had spent time in the old Soviet Union and also lived in Mexico came back from a visit to Mexico and he said, it's hard to believe this, but Ukraine is more corrupt than Mexico.
Wow.
And I think that's true. So this is a world-class disaster. 14 million Ukrainians have left the nation, presumably never to return, because when they're asked in Germany or France or Croatia or Spain or wherever they go, we will never go back. So what are you going to do with this country? And then, of course, we have the usual suspects, the great agricultural business conglomerates, along with BlackRock, who have their eyes on the fertile Ukraine ground in Western Ukraine. I suppose there'll be a big effort to get control of that in some fashion. That may not work, though, once this war ends with a complete and utter defeat of the Ukrainian regime.
Who is Zelensky exactly? How would you characterize Zelensky?
Well, Zelensky...
George W. Bush called him our generation's Winston Churchill.
Well, this is W, right?
Yeah.
Not a very thoughtful man. He was a comedian who made a living acting on stage, frequently pretending to be a transvestite, doing things with various body parts that I won't go into. And he was picked up by an oligarch named Kolomoisky. Kolomoisky is the individual who is probably more responsible than anybody else for funding this atrocity we call the Azov Regiment that runs around with the swastikas and Nazi gear and so forth. And he was picked and then blessed by Victoria Nuland and the State Department as their man. Now, when he originally ran for office, he ran on a peace platform. And he was overwhelmingly elected across the country because he said, if I am elected as your president, I will make peace with Russia. Ukrainians didn't want to go to war with Russia. They were looking for a way out of this and a resolution to the crisis. Of course, once he was in there, he took a different road. And I can't help but think that that road was defined for him by us. And Sullivan will all tell you, well, you know, the Russians are weak. The Russian economy is fragile. The Russian armed forces are poor. Their generals are terrible. And they can't possibly win. All we have to do is to keep up the pressure and they will collapse. Well, that's been a hell of a strategy. And it's killed large numbers of people and created millions of refugees and destroyed the country. But it hasn't hurt Russia. And Russia today is stronger than it has been in 30 or 40 years. You have a Russian military establishment that is now more potent and more capable than the Russian military was in the mid-1980s.
Why? Wars typically, don't they degrade a military force?
Well, the Russians have been very, very careful and deliberate, very cautious about the expenditure of life.
What do you think the casualty numbers are in Russia?
You know, that's a hard one to estimate. I think probably 50,000, 40 to 50,000 killed, maybe another 40 to 50,000 wounded.
Wait, total?
Yes.
As compared to the Ukrainian?
400,000 dead. Yeah.
So this is...
The ratio is 1 to 5.
And you believe those numbers are roughly accurate?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And these
50,000 to 400,000, that's a larger country or with a much smaller country with a much smaller military. I mean, that's a grotesque...
Oh, it is. And the manpower is leaving Ukraine as quickly as it could get out because people don't want to be thrown into the meat grinder. You can't defeat what the Russians have built. They were the first back in the 1970s to understand the criticality of linking intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance in space, as well as on land and at sea, with strike weapons. What's a strike weapon? Rockets, missiles, guided artillery for precision. They've done that extremely well. So that's one of the reasons they have thousands of guns, hundreds of rocket launchers, hundreds of ballistic missile launchers, cruise missiles, and so forth. And these are then linked to that ISR. So the response time is almost instantaneous. A Ukrainian formation is located at this spot next to this building on the outskirts of, say, Kharkov. They can have missiles on the way to those targets, or rockets, or drones, within the space of perhaps 5, 6, 7 minutes. So this is a very well-structured, well-organized machine. And the machine is grinding up everything in front of it. And it's not going to be defeated. Our demonstrated hatred and hostility for Moscow and for Russia has convinced the Russian people, as well as the leadership in Moscow, that they are going to have to fight us and anyone who is allied with us. So they're preparing for that eventuality. That's why it's so important that we have to wake up, understand what we've done has backfired. Whatever we set out to achieve has failed. What we need to do now is stop this and come to a settlement that we may not like, but it needs to happen, and soon, before this thing is out of control. Eventually, you keep this up, within the next 6, 8 months, you'll see hundreds of thousands of Russian troops on the Polish border. That is not what we set out to achieve.
No, it's a terrifying disaster. At what cost do you think to the United States? What
The latest estimates since 2001, spending, including the spending in Ukraine, all the military spending designed to support these interventions, conflicts, wars, whatever you want to call them, about $14 trillion. Now, that $14 trillion is largely debt-financed. So then you have to move from the $14 trillion to where we stand now in national sovereign debt, which, of course, I know the economic luminaries think is meaningless. But you have 130 million workers, and you look at those figures, and suddenly you realize that every adult male or woman in the United States who works for a living has a debt hanging over them of roughly $240,000 in order to deal with what the $14 trillion have added to the national sovereign debt. And this is part of the issue that people are walking away from this war for good reasons. Look, the average American earns about $31,000 a year. That's it. The average American pays about $16,600 a year. Now, the people in Congress, this doesn't affect them, or in the Hill or inside the Beltway. We're talking about the real Americans who live out there who are scratching out a living. Keep in mind that a person who works all his life and then tries to draw on Social Security can expect a monthly payment of probably $1,400, if they're lucky, $1,400. We hand every alleged asylum seeker, illegal migrant, pouring into the border in Texas or wherever else, we hand them, when they get there, $2,200. And we put them on that $2,200 diet from there on out per month. Yet somebody who works all his life, retires and draws Social Security, gets $1,400. The Afghans who were hanging on to the planes in Kabul, trying to come to the United States, when they arrived, they received $2,200 a month. Now, if you can make sense out of this, please try, because I don't think most Americans can make sense out of this at all. And that's one of the reasons people have said, not because they know anything about Ukraine. Most Americans don't. If they knew anything about the history of Eastern Europe, they would all say, get out. Because the wars and the blood and the hatred that have been characterized to that part of the world for hundreds of years is something we can't sort out. We can't fix it. We shouldn't try to arbitrate it. We don't know anything about it. We shouldn't be in this, is the bottom line. I think Americans have figured that out. But now they're beginning to look at the numbers and the figures, and they say, what happened to consent by the governed? Instead, we have contempt for the governed. Whatever the governed want, they don't get. Who gets it? Well, the donors get what they want. You know, somebody was joking the other day and said, you know, Doug, if the donors were cannibals, they'd feed the American people to them. That's the attitude in Washington, D.C. What's the donor want? Give me more money. It's a catastrophe. It's the destruction of our whole republic. I don't think people realize how far gone things are. A lot of Americans sense it. And I think we're on the path to some sort of national come to Jesus moment. And I think we're on the path to some sort of national come to Jesus moment. And I think we're on the path to some sort of national come to Jesus moment where we're tired of being the contemptibles. We want to have a say in what our government does, and we really don't have it.
Yeah, there will be a national come to Jesus moment, but I have bad news. It won't be Jesus. Ignite the right and make war with the East, with Russians and Islam. That's the plan. NATO versus BRICS. But they'll be using the same mark of the beast, central bank digital currency system. It's one big game. Now, I have posted this information on my website, but I don't know, completely forgot about it. It's about Albert Pike's letter to Giuseppe Martini in 1871, talking about three world wars and how that the last war will involve the political Zionists and the leaders of Islamic world. So I will post a picture for you to read on the screen.
My recommendation to the leaders to go to Israel, and I think to support people, just people. I'm not speaking about any institutions, just to support people who've been under terroristic attacks, people who are dying now. It's very important. Unity is more important than to be alone. It's more strong. It's very important.
If you are able, please consider supporting further work on Patreon, PayPal, and don't forget to click the like button. I appreciate your help. Share this with people you care. Thank you, and till next time. Bye.
Oh,